This podcast is brought to you by IFR Magazine.
I'm Jeff Van West for AvWeb, and I'm talking today with Jim Okanek, the former owner of K2 Aviation in Talkeetna, Alaska. How are you doing today, Jim?
Very good. We're not cold here now, and it's very, very, very nice.
What's not cold for up there?
Well, that's a good question. We had 23 above this morning, and for early October, that's pretty good.
I wanted to talk with you today about flying in cold weather, since you have a lot of experience with it. Tell me to begin with, what are some of the things about flying in really cold conditions that would surprise a pilot that hasn't had that kind of experience before?
The aircraft has to be prepared right in, prior to ever even starting it. If we have plus 20 or less, we have to preheat, and that's just absolutely essential, and keep it up unless you're parked inside. And in Alaska, hangar space is really at a premium. So they use a cover over the engine and some kind of electric heater. People use little hair dryers running all night to keep the engine up. Or, of course, there's the Tanis heaters that plug into each cylinder and warm the cylinders. The other thing is you have to keep the aircraft free of snow and ice, or clean it up before you go. You don't have any problem with a reciprocating engine and a carbureted engine. You don't have any trouble with icing at very cold temperatures. There's no water vapor in the air at that temperature. And the aircraft, the engine, performs very well in the cold, dense air. The problems were primarily in getting going and protecting the aircraft on the ground and keeping the pilot and crew warm in flight.
What's your favorite way to get the ice and snow off of the wings and tail surfaces of the aircraft?
Well, I flew float planes a good deal. And when overnight we'd have in the fall, when we were flying, we'd be tied up at a dock, and we'd get there in the morning and the airplane is all covered with frost. And if the temperature had warmed up to just above freezing, then the easiest way was to spray it with a hose, and you could get the frost off that way if the temperature had warmed up to just above freezing. My biggest nuisance was we operated on skis here at Talkeetna, and we'd had trouble with the skis icing up. And if they iced up, takeoff could be impossible until you cleaned it up. And cleaning the bottom of a ski on a heavy airplane is not an easy operation.
How would you clean the bottom of a ski on a loaded airplane that was already on the snow?
I one time took off from Palmer, Alaska, and flew up, and it was wet and sloppy, and I flew up in a matter of 15, 20 minutes. I was landing at 10,000 feet on the Kinnick Glacier, and I had gotten slush kicked up onto the bottom of the ski and going through puddles and so on, getting to the runway, and I had ice on the bottom of the skis. And when I stopped, I nearly went over on my back because there was so much drag on the skis. Well, it stopped upright, but there I was and couldn't move at all. It didn't have, with such a rough bottom on the ski, I had to tunnel under the ski in a small portion of it, say a foot wide at one spot, dig down, and then work underneath the ski and scrape it clean. And I learned to carry along a spatula or some kind of a flat tool that I could use under the ski to clean it up.
What were some of the more challenging things that happened during your time of flying in the Alaskan winter or landing up on the glaciers?
I learned that a glacier is crevassed where it's turning. It's like if you took a peeled banana, and if you bent it, it's going to break apart and segment on the outside of the bend. That's what a glacier does. When it turns a corner, it breaks open on the outside. It also does that where it goes over a drop-off or something. It breaks apart where it's elongated. And so we look for places where the glacier isn't turning in either plane, and then hope for the best. But boy, trying to judge the slope on a glacier is, and with poor lighting conditions, can be very exciting.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Well, I when I first started, I would fly down a place that looked pretty good and drop some pine boughs out and try to lay some of those in a row on the surface and see what that looked like. They become very, very insignificant when you drop them on a glacier that's 45 miles long. I've dropped pine boughs out and never been able to find them again. They just seem to disappear. You know, it's a huge area with no coast reference. I studied areas when the lighting was good, and in the off season when there wasn't new snow on blemished snow. After snow has been wind blowing a little bit, or it's settled and it has melted down on the surface, then you can see the contour and follow it. And then you have to turn the airplane around and get it pointed downhill while you still have some momentum, but not so much momentum that you're going to excessively load the outside ski as you turn around. I've landed a plane and got out and would fall over. The airplane, it wouldn't sense the slope setting in the plane, but when you got out, you couldn't stand up. It was momentarily, you know. Those were the challenges we had in cold weather. It was not so cold that the equipment was bothered, or the pilot in that case, you could dress adequately and still fit in the airplane, but the snow conditions. We joked that the Eskimos had 400 words or some such thing to describe various kind of snow conditions. The glacier pilot here at Talkeetna would have at least 500.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk today, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
This is Jeff Van West reporting for AvWeb and IFR Magazine.
This podcast has been brought to you by IFR Magazine. For more on IFR, log on to www.ifr-magazine.com.